G'day guys, welcome to another episode of the Wealth Lab podcast with Phil and myself, Scott from Wealth Lab. Phil, how are we doing?
Hey guys. Yeah, I'm good, mate. How are you?
I am well. Looking forward to this podcast and this episode because it's been a point of topic for some time. So let's crack into it. How does an SOA affect you, the user, the listener? Are they relevant? What to do with it? How to read it? Why do we even do them? So this podcast is going to be us talking through how to read an SOA, why it's important, and then I'm going to tell you all the reasons it's wrong with it. So, Phil, over to you.
Mate, well, I think the first thing we should do is clarify what the hell SOA even means.
This is true.
So, you know, for those of us not in the industry that don't see these things all the time, it's short for statement of advice. And because us as advisors are talking about them constantly, we keep forgetting that everyone else probably doesn't realize what SOA means, because then we tend to just default to refer it like that. So if we ever try and book you in for an SOA meeting, that's what the hell we're going on about. But let's get into it. What I've done is I've got an SOA here that will run through, and I'll point out the important stuff and sort of what you're looking at when you're reviewing one.
Do you mean a statement of advice there, Phil?
I do mean a statement of advice. That's exactly what I mean. It says it right here on the cover.
So if you're listening to this podcast and we've sent it to you, it means you may have a statement of advice meeting coming up, or an SOA meeting coming up. And that means we'll be presenting our advice to you via a document. And on screen, we've brought a document up, which is a dummy version with the with no client details on it.
Yeah, that's right. I think the first thing to call out with these, and Scott, I'm sure you'll get into this a bit more later, but what do you reckon the average length is? Probably somewhere between 50 and 70 pages, depending on how complex.
Correct. And can you just zoom in a little bit, please? Yeah, and it's always difficult to actually understand what that means. But yeah, I definitely say so.
Yeah. But look, there's a lot of pages here, and I'll let Scott talk more about that later, but I would sort of argue that there's probably only about maybe 10 that are actually going to tell you anything important. So I'll talk through that at a fairly high level. Well, it's going to be a cover page, nothing too exciting there. Moving on. But the important thing to call out here is your statement of advice. It's relevant for you only, and it's relevant for 30 days from the date on the front. And the reason for that is that, you know, sometimes stuff changes. So there is sort of, I guess, a legislative safeguard around that you shouldn't be acting on advice that's more than 30 days old, unless we've had a discussion with you. And you've said, and it's beyond the 30 days, but we've had a really good conversation, nothing's changed, and we're comfortable, the advice is still appropriate, in which case we might have some flexibility to sign off on it anyway. But that's the first point to call out. Fellow contents, I mean, nothing groundbreaking there.
Okay.
State advice, this section's just really just, an opening page. It's nothing really spent too much on it. Labors the point around the 30 days. We get into reasons for seeking advice. Now, what you'll see when you get to reasons for seeking advice is really just a summary. It should be just sort of a brief summary around your situation and kind of a touch on the conversation that, you know, you would have had with your advisor in your initial meeting. So, you know, in this case, why you sought advice? Well, the client's been unhappy with their current provider. They want to explore other options, look at building up for their retirement. So it's just sort of a brief overview of conversations that have been held in financial position.
I might just interject, which is it's very difficult to interface this. Is we'll take, say, for example, someone's goals who goes, look, I'm 15 years from retirement and I want to retire comfortably. And we're going to have to shove that into financial planning esque language, which is, Mr. Client, you have told us that you have a future retirement goal that you are seeking to hit, but are unsure on the dollar amount. So you are seeking our advice in relation to bridging the gap between the goals that you've stated to us, or some old legalese type term that is very financial planner E. And that's really all this document is. It's just a lot of like really, really sort of hard financial planner type language, which, I mean, I'll get to this at the end, but it's a result of the industry becoming far more compliance focused and forgetting about the person going, guys, just bloody help me get more money so I can retire more comfortably, because that's really all I care about.
Yep. Yeah, 100%, mate. And look, this is a prime example. You know, ensure you have sufficient life and TPD insurance to clear your mortgage, as well as looking to income protection. You wish to have your insurance funded by superannuation where possible. Now, this conversation started with a client saying, shit, mate, I'm a bit worried that I've got all this debt and no insurance. What happens if he misses if something happens to me? You know? So You can see we've had a further conversation and this is where we've gotten to. So again, this section is just going to go over those goals and objectives that you would have discussed with your advisor and sort of get a bit deeper into those. Advice in scope. So this would have been the scope of advice that you've agreed upon with your advisor going into the meeting. So in this case, you know, we're looking at cash flow management, we're looking at superannuation, we're looking at insurance, we're looking at estate planning. Anytime that something is not in the scope of advice that is relevant to your situation, that needs to be covered off as well. Now, you may have decided that you don't want advice in certain areas. Like this client, for example, didn't want advice on their debt. They didn't want to look at trauma insurance because they didn't want to spend any money out of pocket. So some things there. So if you've had a conversation with your advisor's called out certain areas that you should be considering and you said, no, thank you, I don't want advice on that. Here's why. This is where that's going to be captured. Then we get into about you. And again, this is just regurgitating back to you all the information that you provided us in that first meeting. So I generally don't spend too much time on this other than making sure that the client's had a look at it and it's all correct.
We do like to use the Sankey tool there, which is a certain type of cash flow tool, which is a very pretty way on showing here's where the money comes in and here's the buckets that it's going to.
Yeah. Yep. Perfect. So now get through all of that. Assets, liabilities, it's really just regurgitating back the stuff from the fact one that we would have completed. Existing insurance policies, you know, most people want to talk to them about existing insurance or insurance through super, they've generally got no bloody idea. So quite often we'll have found out all the details through our research process. You'll remember our previous episode on why we asked for research sheets to sign. This is why we capture all the information and any insurance information. We'd have this listed out for you. When you get to your investment approach, this section all relates to, and again, we've spoken to this about this on a previous podcast, but we get through that risk profiling exercise. We have a really good discussion with you around, you know, your tolerance for risk, investment concepts, all that sort of stuff. We would have signed your risk profile at first meeting, and this just gets into the detail around that a bit more and the different asset classes. So it's just information for those that are interested enough that they want to go and sort of read a bit further around all that sort of stuff. And then a breakdown of what your actual risk profile is and the resulting asset allocation. When I say asset allocation, how much in shares, how much in property, how much in cash, all that stuff, are we basing our recommendations on?
Yep.
Now we're starting to get to some meat. So we get down to my advice. This section, very high level. Just
so are we halfway through yet? And we've actually only now gone on to what we suggest or where are we at?
I wouldn't even say we're halfway through. we're on page 12 of 51, mate. So, Don't worry, I'm not going to walk you through all 51 pages in minute detail. this section is just giving you very high level what our recommendations are. But more interestingly, as we get down, now we start to get into each individual recommendation in a bit of detail. So, you know, in this case, we've made some recommendations around directing some cash surplus to paying debt down. Now, even in this case where the client said they didn't really want advice on their debt, they occasionally had some surplus income. They didn't want to direct to super. So I just wanted to make sure that I was really clear with what I thought they should do with it. That's that. Superannuation rollover, the details around what we've recommended with the super and why. With a bit of a breakdown on the portfolio that's recommended. I want to call out here, this is an advice document that has not been prepared for any of you that might be sitting here watching it. So do not go and follow this. We will work with you individually to build something suitable.
To be specific, you're going to get your own one that's customized to what you want.
That's right. Don't just go follow this random one you saw on the internet one time.
or alternatively, try TikTok because apparently that's what people are doing now.
Hey, sure, why not?
Anyway, that's me at the end. I'm sorry, I've got my topics. They're just bubbling up.
Yep, good. So look, the important thing to call out, I guess, with any of these recommendation sections, the first bit's going to tell you what we've recommended you do. So in this case, we recommend you roll your super from AMP to Macquarie and invest it this way. Why my advice is right for you, you'll see this in every section where we've made a recommendation, and it just details why we've made that recommendation and why we think it's appropriate for your case. Now, in this particular case, it was a small saving in fees. That really wasn't the main reason for it. It was because the platform had a lot of additional benefits, so we wanted it and allowed us to structure a portfolio in line with our investment philosophy, which this particular client was quite happy with. A whole bunch of information all around that and why it's right for you. And the important thing now to look at is this section here, risks and things to consider. So every recommendation is going to come with a section titled risks and things to consider. And it's just things that you should know about or you should think about before proceeding with that recommendation. And as we're going through this document with you, we'll call these out and we'll explain them and anything that's important. But that's what this section's about, and it's worth sort of having a look at. Then we get into a bit more detail around proposed investment portfolio. So again, it's the rollout from the funds and the new recommendations. And then why we've recommended those, how it all works, and a bit of detail around each of the funds that we've recommended. So look, some people are going to be like, Phil, give me the high level. I don't want to know the nitty gritty because that's what I'm paying you for. And other people are going to want to know a fair bit. So, you know, choose your own adventure. But whatever you do, make sure you know enough and understand enough that you're comfortable with what we've recommended and you're comfortable for us to put in place. And if you don't know, ask. There's no stupid questions. You're not expected to know this stuff. Back to the asset allocations. So this links back to that earlier page we were on where we spoke about your risk profile. This shows your current asset allocation, the recommended asset allocation, and probably the most important thing is what the target was and if there's any variance to that target. So, you know, we would generally consider anything within about 10% of where it should be to be okay. Anything outside of that, we're going to use some rationale down here. So if we've moved sort of significantly away from what this target should be, and sometimes that happens, there is reasons for it, and we'll explain those reasons for you here. Insurance, so this again, it's just another recommendation page. It's laid out the same. Here's our recommendations. Here's our advice. Here's why it's right. And risks and things to consider. So much the same as when we went through superannuation. But the next thing here is whenever we're giving insurance advice, we're generally undertaking what's called insurance needs analysis. And this will give you a breakdown of how we came up with the amounts that you should be insured for. So you can see in this case, we've got one-off expenses, which is made up of like medical expenses, funeral expenses, that sort of stuff. And then you can see other expenses. Now, if I've used other expenses, I'll generally just put some notes down the bottom here about what that actually means. So in this case, it's a bit of income replacement because one partner wasn't working, so it'd give her time to find work. And then there's also, you know, little known fact, but total and permanent disability insurance. If it's paid through super, it's taxable. One of the most miserable things the ATO has ever done. So we'll generally will gross up to make sure you're not getting a shortfall because the miserable buggers at the tax office want to slice your disability payout. But that explains all that, you know, then we're clearing debt. Pretty straightforward. Sometimes we'll reduce the amounts that you need by any existing cover or superannuation you have. I haven't done that in this case, but it's all laid out here for you so you can understand the rationale behind how we came up with what you need to be insured for. Then we just get into a breakdown of the policies, the costs, all that sort of stuff's laid out for you there. And then the impacts on superannuation. So anytime we're recommending, sorry.
And I think, have we hit the halfway point yet on this document?
This is the halfway point.
So, unfortunately I can't help myself here, but like the purpose of you engaging us to the person listening to this call is for you to pay us money to give you it. And the minutiae of it is it's very, very important. But we do this for you, and this is just us really showing you the background work that we do. Mm-hmm. And a criticism of this is just saying, well, don't you guys just do this anyway? Like, why are you showing me line by line what you've done? It's like me going to a painter. I have no idea about the paint selection process, about how the paint is made, about the type of paint that's required, about the time it takes to cure or whatever the term is. Just get the job done. Unfortunately, that's where I'm coming from because that's my personality. Yeah. If you have a personality that craves the details and really likes to make sure everything's checked off, this document is for you. You will love it. Keep going.
Look, that's true. And you do get those mixture of clients. Right? Just the other day, I was going through one of these and the guy stopped me on page 2 and said, mate, honestly, I don't care about any of this. Can you just do it? His language is a bit more colourful. But, some people, they just want to get on with it. Other people want the detail. Mm. Yeah, like I said, choose your own adventure, but make sure you understand.
If you're the average person listening to this, effectively what we're doing is we're helping you bridge that gap between where you are and where you're going to get to in the future. And this is just really very clearly articulating the process in it. So let's keep going. So what we hear is your insurances. So there will be an impact. So if you pay insurances, there will obviously be an impact because you got to pay for it. It's not free. Yep.
Exactly right. So generally we'll give you an analysis of what does it look like if you've got no insurance? What does it look like if you've got insurance? And what does it look like if you've got insurance, but you're also making contributions to pay for it? So very high level, just helps you make an informed decision there. Estate planning. So we're down to the last recommendation, Scott. You can get excited. So estate planning, and again, this is just a ton of information. Now, important to call out, we are not lawyers. We cannot give you specific estate planning advice on how to, you know, structure your will, nominations, that sort of stuff. We're calling out here important stuff that you should consider, and we can provide you a referral to a solicitor if you need one.
We're also pointing out how freaking important it is to do this.
So important.
Really important to get this one done. You can speak to a lawyer, you can do it online, just get something in process, something in the works, so that you and your significant other do have something in place should anything happen to you and you, your assets do need to pass to somebody else.
Yep, 100%. You know, and so important. We've dedicated a few pages to it there. One of my advice is right for you. Again, this just goes back over what your goals were, what we've recommended, and how each of our recommendations helped you achieve those goals. So again, it's getting right back into all that stuff and why it's appropriate for you specifically. And this is not just a document I pulled off a shelf that I hand to everyone. It's a specific document for you and how it aligns to what you wanted to do. Mm-hmm. Alternative strategies and products. Now this gets into, you know, there's never a single right answer when a client comes to see us. And so generally we're considering a whole bunch of different options when we're putting together the advice for you. That's why it takes us a few weeks, you know, doing the research and working out what we're going to do. So in this section, we go through, here's some of the other stuff we considered. We didn't recommend this, and here's why we didn't recommend it. We went with our other recommendations instead. So just sort of shows you some of the background work, you know, or I guess, you know, think back to high school, show you're working. That's our working. then we're getting into cost comparisons. Again, just comparing costs of, you know, if we're replacing one product with another, we need to compare the costs of the two so you understand what's going on there. Cost of our advice, we would have discussed this already, you would have agreed with it, so there should be no surprises there. And any insurance, so look, most insurers, if we're placing new business, will pay a commission. You know, that's the same commission from every insurer, so there's really no incentive. For us, it's really just down to what's the right product for you. And it's not an additional cost to you. It's something they pay anyway. So we just need to call it out there so that you're aware of it. And then just a bunch of disclosures. So no, you know, anything around any conflicts of interest, anything you need to know, you know, the 30-day time frame getting called out again, privacy policy, all this stuff we would have discussed up front anyway. And then any assumptions we've used in any modelling we've done. Another important section. Look, technically, you should be reading all of these. I don't think I've ever met a person that has, but maybe. But product disclosure statements. Anytime we recommend a product to you, we must provide you with the product disclosure statement for that. So you'll have links to all of those in your statement of advice. Steps through to how to implement. But again, we'll talk through all that with you in the meeting. And then the authority to proceed. So this is where the rubber hits the road. This is where you either tick the box and say, yep, Phil, you're amazing. Thanks so much. We're going to do everything you said. Or thanks, Phil, you're pretty amazing, but we don't love everything and we want to make a couple of changes. So that's that. We both sign off on it there and away we go. Appendices, again, just regurgitating all the fee stuff for probably the third or fourth time throughout the document. Any transaction costs, all that sort of gear. Now, we won't always have projections in a statement of advice, but sometimes we will. For this particular client, it was very relevant, so I did some. This section is just laying out any assumptions that we have used in those projections, and then kind of what that looks like. Yeah, you know, we may use different tools, so it's not always going to look like this, or it may not even be here depending on your situation. But in this case, I will call out, if we use the tool and you've got a projection that looks like this, black lines are money that you need to fund your living costs. Green lines are money that you have coming in. So you want to make sure that you don't run out of green lines before you run out of black lines. Simple as that. So in this case, this client retires at 60. They're out of money by early 70s. If they push through another 5 years, they get into their mid-80s. So that's that in a nutshell. But again, that'll be individualized to you and whether or not it's required. And then the last couple of sections are just any products we've considered, because, you know, although we've recommended Macquarie, we did consider some other options. It just shows you the comparisons between those two options. Plenty of conjecture about whether or not this needs to be in there or not. I kind of think it's nice to show you we did a bit of homework, but yeah, that's that. That is a statement of advice in a nutshell, Scott. Oh, I think you've gone on mute there, mate.
Okay, that was me clapping and saying, leave that open.
Yeah, right, beautiful.
But that's okay. So, well done if you've come this far and you're still listening and you haven't fallen asleep. What I want you to do, if you are listening to this episode and you were to Google Michelle Levy Financial Services Reform, MICHELLELEVY, Michelle Levy. So Michelle Levy, in February of 2022, put together a document to Parliament stating that the SOA is ineffective. and isn't operating to, isn't really fit for purpose. And the reason why is that it's, in some cases, I know other advice practices are doing this. They're providing a document that's over a 100 pages, and it's like thumped on the piece of, you know, thumped on the desk, and the client is like, right, read this, understand this completely, and then go through it. Which I think is ridiculous, because like I said before, I think it should be a concept of you as a professional are the one that I'm paying. You figure this out. I don't want to do this. I don't have to think about it. Just fix it for me.
You're not paying to give you homework? Is that what you're saying?
So the government has paid another government official to be told that the government original standing is ineffective. So the new government official has gone back to them saying, you're right, it is ineffective. You should stop doing this. As you know, if you Google retirement is too late, Levy slams Labor. It's a AFR article. Michelle Levy put 22 recommendations together, and one of them was to remove statements of advice. So saying these documents are not being understood by people because they're too wordy, they're too long, and they also don't really hold you to anything. So if you sign this, what are you being held to? Well, nothing. You can change your mind. Like, you know, you're not really bound by the terms of it. It's basically you just accepting the fact that, yeah, no worries, I'm happy to implement my advice. That's really the top level of it. The rest is a lot of generic wording, which makes up the bulk of the SOAs that we've seen, and that's an area that the ASIC has suggested people really cut down, but I think it still is getting slipped into there, like around generic wording, just on, say, for example, I've seen pages and pages on super contributions and risk profile and stuff that's not really relevant to you as the client being presented a document, but it's sort of included there to almost bulk up the advice process. It looks like 14 of her 22 recommendations have been accepted, and they have agreed that the SOA is not working and to phase it out, but they have no idea what is that going to be replaced by. So that's kind of where we're sitting at. A key principle, probably the most important document that you'd receive from a financial advisor, the government has agreed that it's not really relevant, has agreed to outlaw it, or has agreed to phase it out. It doesn't have a plan or an alternative. So the SOA isn't going anywhere.
No. That's why it's interesting too. We were talking about this the other day, but, you know, I also read articles from, you know, some of the big professional indemnity insurers and stuff like that. It says, we don't care what the law says, we're not going to insure anyone that's not providing a statement of advice anyway. So it kind of looks like maybe some of those recommendations are going to get hamstrung regardless, because we're not going to have a choice. Yeah. But it's funny. So it's kind of like a bit of a, it's quite funny because they say that they want a statement of advice to be clear and concise, but then mandate so much stuff has to be in it that it's impossible to make it clear and concise. It's kind of, I do remember Michelle Levy saying something along the lines of that the legislation relating to financial advice just being so incomprehensible that she's amazed anyone can figure it out.
Yeah, it's also error prone as well, because if the information that we collect from you as a client is really a snapshot in time and you know, things do change, and when we did that fact find, it could have been 5 weeks ago, and yes, you did correctly point out that this is a 30 day snapshot, but you could forget, you could go on holidays, you know, like, just life is messy, and trying to make that fit into this really like legalese black and white document, which the compliance consultants absolutely love, is a very difficult process. And you know, if I were to say, Is it a great document? No, it isn't. Certainly, it's a good record of what we are suggesting you do. But we can also verbalize that, and we could realistically do it in a 2-page document, which is what the American advisors do. So, you know, financial planning globally is a very similar process, which is you have a retirement gap that you're wishing to bridge, and you're seeking a professional help on doing that. And we could really be anywhere in the world, and that's what the same occupation is doing. The Americans have solved this to a better degree with 2-page documents, which is where you're at, where you want to get to. Here's the funds we're going to put you in. Here's your profile. Sign here. I think they do fees as well. And that's basically it. You know, that'd be something great for us to do that. Look, who knows? If they do implement it, it may even reduce the cost of advice as well, which would be a good thing. But look, what I'm going to say is that if you are presented with one of our advice documents, one of the things that I always do is just basically just go straight to the back, show me the appendix, because that's where the actual maths is. That's what's where the calculations are going to be around bridging the gap. Does this make sense? That'd be my first tip. If you were looking in SOA, check the appendix, look at the specific calculations. Are they realistic? Are they using rate of return that's too high or too low? Or is it a rate of return that you would expect to be normal? And by that, I mean, is it linked to your risk profile? So for example, if you have a conservative risk profile, your rate of return is different to someone who is a high growth investor. A high growth investor is going to have more money over the long term, assuming that you can tolerate some ups and downs. So is that correct? Does that make sense to you as a human? That'll be my first tip. Second tip is make sure that you understand what the insurances are looking like within your fund. You know, we can have the best financial plan in the whole world, but if you get hit by a car or you die, that's really going to change things. So is that organized? Is that in place? And I say probably a final point is that, do you understand what you actually want out of a fund? Is it purely just rocket fuel growth? Or do you want good service? Or do you want someone that's got a really good iPhone app? Or whatever it is that you like or that you're looking for from an investment account, have a think about what you want, because we as advisors can recommend it. There's a huge range of options. Yeah. And, you know, if you want to just go to just the one that's absolutely the highest, most rocket fuel fund in the country, well, we probably won't be recommending that, because that's probably a bit much, but there is some funds that we can recommend that are doing really well, but are super volatile. And if you are comfortable with that, that's something we can blend in. Or if you are just sort of wanting a bit more of a hedge and it's just really seeking our advice, talk to us. We'll go through the process of that risk profile and we'll put together a portfolio that we are pretty confident is a good match for your needs, and we'll review it on an ongoing basis.
Yeah, and that's the key. Nothing to set and forget. Then the other thing I'd say, you know, you go through a statement of advice meeting, you know, we've done the whole advice thing, we're here, we've got your advice. Don't let any questions go unasked. No matter how silly you think they might be, I guarantee I've heard something sillier. There's no stupid questions. Don't be shy. You know, make sure you're comfortable. I don't expect you to go home and then be able to sit and examine off the back of this document. If you don't know something or you're not sure or I haven't explained it well enough for you, pull me up, ask me for another go. It's, you know, it's completely okay.
Love it. Right. Bill,
beautiful
episode.
Yeah, nothing I love more than running through a statement of advice.
Also, if you listen to this and you've been given a statement of advice from a different advisor and it has been a lump of paper and physically sent to you, probably time to review it. Going forwards, most statement of advice should be digital only, so you can do a control find within them. It's a real bugbear of mine when I get a client who has spoken to a different advisor and they've been given this like beautiful book, and you've got no way to really digitally scan through it. So, just as a pro tip, if you do get one of those, might be time to be looking for a different advisor. All right. One that can work your computer and that, has a sort of a functional team that can figure out what's going on. Have a great week. Thanks, Phil.
Cool, mate. Thank you. Have a good one.
Hey, guys.
Cheers. Bye. See ya. Bye.